Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. And this week we're joined by Angela Chang are you based out of BC, Angela? Is that correct?
I'm in Vancouver. Yeah.
Vancouver, British Columbia, up in Canada. Excited to have you on here. We're going to talk about ultra endurance stuff today, an event that literally spanned a whole week. The BC Epic 1000, so different. Just last week, by the time this publishes, last week we're talking about a 90-minute cross-country race with somebody. Prior to that, a 40-minute criterium, and this week we're talking about a whole week-long race. Angela, can you briefly explain what BC Epic 1000 is?
Yeah, so the BC Epic is a self-supported bike packing race. Leonard in Kamloops started this. So he wanted to do the Tour Divide, but it's far away. It's a lot of time commitment. So he wanted to map out a route close to home that he could try out. So he mapped out this route from Merritt to Fernie. So it crosses a good chunk of BC on mostly rail grade roads. So kind of decommissioned railroads. And he, the first year he did it, I think he, told a few people about it and half of them finished. And then it kind of snowballed into this big event every year. So you could ride from either direction. Most people start in Merritt. That's where the mass start starts. You could also go from Fernie to Merritt. So okay. Either way works. It's about 11,000 meters of climbing. Not sure what that translates to in feet.
Yeah, it's about 38,000 feet of climbing over the whole route, which is amazing. Yeah.
And then so about 1,000, just over 1,000 kilometers.
Which is about 660 miles.
Okay.
Yeah. We got this, you and I. We got this. Canada and United States working together.
Yeah.
And can you give people an idea of what the climates, because you ride through various different climates within this, what's the terrain like in Merritt? And then what's the terrain like in Fernie and perhaps any variations in between?
Yeah. So I want to say starting in Merritt, I actually did the opposite direction, but most people start in Merritt. Merritt to me is semi-arid, so kind of semi-desert-like, dry and hot. And by the time you get to Fernie, it's so close to the Alberta border, it starts to look a little bit like a prairie, but it was hilly. So it's not flat like the prairie. So there's a big change in the climate and the vegetation. There's you basically will not get bored riding this route. Everything changes dramatically from one end to the other. Generally in BC, at the end of June, which is when the race starts, it's pretty comfortable. This year was an exception. I don't know if you heard about the heat dome during the week when the day started. So the race started June 26th, and that's when the heat wave started. So I think on my Garmin, the highest temperature I recorded was 48 Celsius. Which
that's
is
118 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that was one really hot hour. The rest of the time was, I would say during the day, ranged anywhere from 35 to 45 Celsius.
Wow. So you're talking like 95 to 110 degrees roughly.
That's
hot.
So we're not used to that here.
Yeah.
So that made the event really interesting this year for sure.
Yeah. Cause in between that arid zone, and then when you're getting closer to the prairie side of things, but Fernie is still, there's a big ski resort in Fernie and it's these huge mountains. It's forested, right? And it's dense forest. I'm sure you go through spots that even feel a bit more like a rainforest almost because the vegetation's so dense. So you're covering like every climate in between.
Yeah.
And certainly one that usually you wouldn't assimilate in those, those beautiful pine forests and stuff with such crazy heat. So how does this race work in terms of the logistics of overnight stays? Did you bring like a bivy or did you bring a full tent setup or were you staying in hotels? How did that work?
Well, I went in having this plan of maybe every other day I would stay in a hotel. So I figure, you know, a shower would be nice at some point. Yeah. So I started with, because of the heat, which changed almost everything for me, I figured I'll just do hotels if I happen to end in a town where hotels are available. So I did that for the first three nights. And then I realized this is taking too long. Hotels tend to suck you in. You know, you got to check in, then you get a shower, then you want to wash your clothes. It's, all that adds up.
Yeah.
So by the midpoint, I decided to ditch the hotel idea and just camp. So because of the heat, I did not bring a sleeping bag. I did not bring a pad. All I had was a Bora Gear BV bag. So it's this super thin, it crumbles down to like nothing, really just to keep my clothes clean when I sleep in dirt. And I would sleep in side of the trail, on a picnic table, anywhere.
How did you do that with no pad underneath you at all?
You know, I kind of thought I would have a problem with it, but I was so tired that I fell asleep anyway. At that point, I didn't care about a pad.
Turns out that's all we need to do to make our beds more comfortable is just
exactly complete exhaustion.
How funny. So that was, what did you split up your, once you were free of the hotels and you were more just going and then pitching the tent or the bivy wherever you were?
Yeah.
How did you set goals for how much distance you'd cover each day? Or when did, or better said, when did you call it quits and time to rest?
I would try to ride during the cooler times of the day. So the other thing I realized, I really need to ride at night when it's much cooler. Just the heat of the day was really, it was really difficult. So I think I started at 9 o'clock. So once I decided to ditch the hotel, I left a hotel at 9 or 8:30 or 9 that night, rode till about 2 when I got really sleepy, pulled over on the side of the trail, nap for an hour and a half, and got up while it's still cool to ride. So I would basically try to ride during the cooler time of the day. When it hit about 43, 44 degrees Celsius, 115, yeah, I would pull over and have another nap.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That sounds really, was that hard with getting used to like this nocturnal schedule?
By that time, it was the second half of the race. It was difficult, but I think everything felt difficult at that time.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it was the second half, I really just wanted to finish.
Yeah. We're going to get more into the race, but I want to get into more your context as an athlete and how you prepared for it. And then we'll get into more like the execution details. So first of all, Angela, can you just give us an idea of what your life circumstances are like? So job, family, all that stuff.
Yeah. I'm a tax partner in a national accounting firm, so I have a pretty busy, demanding work schedule. I have a family, two kids, they're 8 and 10. My life is pretty easy in comparison to lots of other moms because I have a full-time stay-home dad husband. Mm-hmm. So I really want all the moms out there to understand that I have it really easy. I am fairly spoiled. So that's kind of job, family. In terms of athleticism, I really did not grow up playing any sports. I grew up in Taiwan, where academics is king and sports is really low on the totem pole. When I turned 40, I decided, you know, there's a bunch of family health issues and I wanted to get ahead of it because now I have two kids. I want to be around for a long time. So I started running 5K at a time. Didn't really enjoy it. just not a runner. And I bought a oversized road bike to commute to work and, you know, 5 kilometers each way. And I thought, well, this is pretty cool. And then I heard about the Whistler Fondo. So it's a local event. It's 122K to ride from Vancouver to Whistler. Yeah. So I signed up for a
absolutely
clinic.
Absolutely beautiful too.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. Yeah. Yeah. You get to see the whole Howe Sound with water and mount. Oh, it's amazing.
The water's like turquoise. It almost glows. It's so bright. It's just stunning for anybody that hasn't seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. And they shut down the highway. So you ride in the middle of the highway. It's amazing. Oh,
yeah.
So I started that in 2017, signed up for a clinic to learn how to ride a road bike properly. And I've kind of just been hooked ever since.
How cool.
Yeah.
So what got to the point where you were thinking, I want to take on a multi-day ultra endurance event like BC Epic 1000?
You know, there are things that I do in my life. I can't really explain why. I just think, I just look at something and go, wow, that looks really cool. And I tend to be drawn to the longer distance type things. So even back when I rode a motorcycle, it was, you know, there was an event called the Iron Butt. You ride 1,000 miles in 24 hours.
Whoa.
I like that type of thing. Mm. So you don't go really fast, but you go for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm naturally drawn to that. And then I follow people like Lia Wilcox and Jenny Tuff, and I see these races they do, learn about the Tour Divide. I thought that was cool. So I looked around, and BC Epic was close by. But still, it's 1,000 kilometers.
It's huge. Yeah.
But Leonard, who organizes it, also does an event called Buckshot. So if you go on the BC Epic 1000 website, you'll see the Buckshot, which is 450 to 480K. And it's a loop around Kamloops, where he lives. Mm. So I thought, I'll try this first as a test. So I tried it in 2019 and scratched before halfway point.
Ooh, what are the tough lessons learned on that one?
I didn't know how to fix my bike. So when the gear got jammed up, as I was riding a single speed, I didn't know what to do. Didn't bring enough food. So I bonked really hard, couldn't get to the next supply point before they closed. So I called my husband, who drove on the Forest Service road, to come rescue me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that had to have been was he there in Kamloops or in that region? Oh, thank goodness. That way you didn't have to come from Vancouver. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that like, taking on a bigger challenge like that, something aspirational, and then coming up short?
It was a good learning experience. I wasn't super sad about scratching, but I made detailed notes of what I learned. I really only rode for about, I started one afternoon and I scratched the next. So I was on the road for 24 hours, including a sleep in a ditch. So I wrote detailed notes about everything I learned and what I still need to learn in order to do this right next time. Mm. So I felt like the learning experience was valuable.
Yeah.
So I was set to do that again in 2020. And then COVID happened and everything got canceled.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So how did you build, so let's talk about your training for this one. You have a busy job. So let's talk about when you train, first of all, then we'll talk about how you use Trainer Road to prepare for this. But when do you fit it in with, and I don't know if in Vancouver, you mentioned you had that 5 kilometer commute. I don't know if that's still the case, but we have children, you have commuting, you have your busy job, you have everything else. When do you train?
So I like training first thing in the morning. As soon as I roll out of bed, so I get my trainer set up the night before, or my nutrition ready in the fridge, because if I roll out of bed and not think about it, it's a lot easier to just do it. Mm. I try training in the afternoon, evenings, when I have a bit more, food in me, nutrition, but honestly, I spend all day thinking I'm too tired, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. Then the fail rate is a lot higher when I train in the evening. So I think that the best compromise for me was just to train first thing in the morning.
That's an interesting point too. So there's like a lot of pressure that a lot of people feel that they need to train first thing in the morning, or they need to train after work and after the kids go to bed, or they need to train in the afternoons or squeeze it in at lunch. Yeah. But everybody has their different approaches. But the fatigue part is interesting, because you aren't working a job that's physical in nature, right? No, but it still is exhausting, right?
Yeah.
It's that mental fatigue that accumulates over the day, and that makes it really tough to be able to do the workouts.
I think it's the mental fatigue that really gets to me. And honestly, I'm really great at making excuses for myself. I'm too tired. I need to hang out with the kids.
I need to do
something else. So
sure.
Yeah. And then, yeah, then after trying that for a few weeks, I'm like, no, I'm not necessarily a morning person, but I just need to not think about what I have to do. As long as everything's ready the night before, I could just get on the trainer and do it. Mm-hmm. When the weather is nice, in the summertime, I would actually do my rides outdoors. And there's that really nifty ability to switch to do this outdoors.
Yeah.
I live close enough to a few hills. So if I have to do VO2 max, I could easily ride 10 minutes to the bottom of the hill and do that there.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes. Yeah. Outside workouts are so great, being able to do it in whichever context you need, right?
I think having that flexibility is huge, just because, you know, if the weather is terrible, I probably want to stay on the trainer. If the weather is nice, the sun's shining, I want to be outside.
Yeah, because it rains quite a lot there in Vancouver. It's pretty common. So yeah, you have and winter is pretty tough too. So what plan did you follow for this when you use Trainer Road? There's a temptation that because it's a long event to just do whatever you'll do for that race. So just ride in, you know, zone one, zone two, would be the high end of things. But what did you follow?
I followed the cross country marathon plan.
Yeah. Strangely, I think it's the right approach for this one. What brought you to arrive at that decision?
I really didn't know which one to pick, to be honest. Obviously, it needs to be a long enough of an event. So I was, you know, doing a search on the forum and somebody said, oh, they used this plan to train for the Epic a couple of years ago. So I just used it.
Yeah. So let's talk about the route a little bit in terms of like the road surface that you're on. How much of it is road? How much of it is like two track or single track, or I think even a lot of the majority of it, if I have it correctly, also is sounds like retired railroad paths as well.
Yeah. I don't know the percentage. I would say a good chunk is on gravel. In terms of single track, there's only like there's a 30 kilometer section that's kind of really technical mountain bike trail where I had a lot of issues. and then there's one single track, it's called Chief Isidore Trail, which is a mountain bike trail, but really nicely maintained. Almost everything else is decommissioned railroads. So they at some point have ripped out the railroad and just left it as a trail. Some sections are really nice. For example, Myra Canyon, which is really close to Kelowna, it's a big tourist attraction. So there's this 11 kilometer section that's rail grade and goes through all the trestles and is beautiful. And you oversee this canyon, and they've graded that really nicely. So it's smooth gravel. Honestly, a lot of the rest of it was not very nice.
What was the surface like?
Oh, it's anywhere from a lot of deep sand to baby head rocks and broken gravel. Like it was not nice.
Oh my gosh. So the sand and then the crushed gravel really suck your power out, and you have to pick lines nonstop. Yeah. So that's super fatiguing. And then if you have baby heads and bigger rocks to pick from, you're still picking lines, and when you have to go over something, it just sucks up more watts.
Yeah.
So it's slow going. It's not a fire road race then.
Not for me.
Yeah. So in that case, it makes sense actually, the cross country marathon plan, because I'm sure you had plenty of opportunities where you had to surge and you had to put out high amounts of power just to get through things or to get over things or to deal with those rough sections.
Yeah, I suppose. And honestly, I don't know enough about mountain biking to know what cross country marathon even means. but I felt like the plan, so I guess the way I gauged it is after the ride, I felt like I had the legs to keep going. Like my legs were okay to ride even more. It's the rest of me that sort of fell apart. So to me, I felt like that was likely the right plan, or at least on track to train for something like this.
Yeah. What sort of workouts were the hardest for you in the training plan? And then was there a specific type of workout that was easier than another?
I didn't really feel like anything was hard. I would say when it's kind of the building part towards the end was getting fairly difficult with any of the workouts, but that doesn't happen for a long time. Mm. I certainly would feel it. Those weeks are a little rough.
Yeah.
But I love how everything, I think even the longest workout was maybe an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And I could handle it in my life.
Right. Yeah. And that meant that you didn't have to go out and do crazy long hours to prep for this long thing. And you ended up being okay and getting through the really long thing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Did you, talking about the workouts, did you have to make adjustments to the plan with the busy lifestyle and the flexibility? And if so, like, for example, did you skip certain workouts or did you prioritize certain workouts over others?
So during the week, I am pretty much stuck to the workout. It's just, I really also love this feature that you got to tell your guys that I could add it to my calendar. Mm-hmm. And I sort of live by my calendar with coordinating kit stuff, work stuff, training. So if it's in my calendar, I'm pretty good at sticking to it. And because it shows up right in my Outlook calendar, when I wake up in the morning, I know I need to get on my bike and train. Weekends, I tend to leave it a little more flexible, just so I could go riding with friends. So sometimes the weekend one, I would not necessarily skip it, but I'll just go do something else to ride with my friends.
Yeah, totally. And that also probably opened up a whole lot of personal satisfaction on the bike that was necessary to keep the motivation going, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And during the week, especially in the winter when it's dark and rainy out, no one else really wants to go out and ride anyway. So I'll just do my workout in the morning and be ready for work. But on weekends, even if it's not very nice out, people are more willing to go out and do a ride. So we'll do a lot of gravel rides and try to go a little longer so I could test out gear and that type of thing.
That's awesome. Which volume plan did you follow? Do you remember if it was low, mid, or high?
The mid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then because you guys always say that on the podcast, don't go with the high one if you can't handle it.
Yeah. And it's tempting, right? Long, big volume event to do high volume, but if your life can't sustain it, you can't let an event drag you into unrealistic expectations on a week by week basis, just for one day, or in this case, 1 week.
Yeah, I agree.
For the event. Yeah. Yeah. So what about nutrition? This is being so long, this is as much an eating event as it is a riding event lasting that long. But also since the intensity is lower and just the logistics of carrying everything with you, you can't carry all of this in powdered drink mix the whole way and just fuel off of that. What did you end up eating? And then how did you train yourself to eat that leading into the event?
Well, training myself to eat is probably the most training I've ever done in my life. So I don't have a problem eating on the bike. So I was planning to do the ride in 7 days. And when I looked at all the stuff I have to bring, if I decide to bring all my powder drinks, that was just too much and too heavy. Mm. So obviously I wasn't going to do that. So I brought 3 days worth of, Hammer Perpetuum. So I brought 3 days worth of that. And that isn't the full calorie amount I needed for each of the 3 days. It's just maybe a third of it. I figure I would buy food on the way as well. So I had Perpetuum with me. I brought a ton of electrolyte tablets because of the heat. Other than that, I would stop at gas stations and buy cheesies, burritos, Red Bull. So whatever is available.
Yeah.
It was mostly a gas station food fueled ride.
That's
it was
awesome.
Not that nice.
Was that hard on your stomach eating a lot of that food, or since your body was just constantly in this active state, did it handle it well?
Yeah, it was fine. I have trained to eat on the bike. So I certainly would, I don't eat the entire burrito in one go. So I'll take bites. take a break, take a few bites. And I tend to stick with the, I guess, the higher carb and less protein type things, just because they're easier to digest. And I find mixing up the savory and the sweet really helps me not to have palate fatigue, I think. Yeah, I would get tired of sweets. So yeah. I would change things up.
Yeah. You mentioned that the rest of you got tired. And this is probably a good spot. We should first talk about your equipment and then get into the fatigue from the event. What bike did you ride? Because I've seen people online debating with this race, whether it's like, well, maybe it's faster if I ride my cyclocross bike and just put some bigger tires on there. But it seems like a mountain bike seems to be the favored bike for this event. So what did you use?
So I rode a Salsa Warbird. It's a gravel bike. Mm-hmm. And I put on, so my tires are 42 millimeters, 43. So it's whatever came stock on them. They're Terraville Cannonball tires, and they're great tires. Because a friend of mine has done it on a gravel bike. So I thought, oh, well, if somebody else did it, I'm sure I can handle it.
Yeah. And how did that, so some people have said that it's brutal. was that the decision that made the rest of you fatigued?
Yeah, it was brutal. It's doable. So the bike is very capable. I didn't crash or anything. I wish I had wider tires. I wish I had more cushion. And the worst part was my hands. I didn't realize how such a long distance ride, my hands would be so fatigued. Because of all the bumps. So I rode at maybe 20 PSI.
So pretty low.
Pretty low, just to cushion as much as I could. But my hands got so tired from the bumpiness of all the rocks.
Yeah.
So by day five, I was crying because my hands hurt so much. And I didn't have aero bar, so I couldn't change position that much.
Yeah.
And I really wish I had aero bars.
How did you get over that? Because that presents a real danger when you couple the fatigue with the fact that since your hands are sore, you're not holding your bars as tightly, or at least not holding them the same as you normally would. How did you manage that?
I cried. I was mad at Leonard, who organized this. I don't know why I was mad at him. He didn't make the road. I was very irrational at that point. But anyways, there are sections where you ride through town, so it's on pavement, and I would just rest my elbows on the bars just to give my hands a break. So we've been back 2 months now. Some of my fingers are still numb right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think it's, and I'm now realizing that a lot of other people struggle with the same things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sort of nerve. In fact, even after, I think it's the only long thing I've ever done really is that, is Everesting. And it was almost a whole day. We did a crazy route and I had numbness in my hands for a couple months thereafter in my fingers. I couldn't feel.
Okay.
I believe it was my outer two fingers. So basically, my ring and pinky finger on one side, I couldn't feel them.
Yeah. I think that's fairly common because the ulnar nerves get pinched.
Got it.
Mine is somehow all of my fingertips. I don't know what that means, but
anyway. How strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ultra endurance stuff is brutal, man. It takes a toll. Yeah.
So I think like I would manage that better next time. I would put on some aero bars just so I could change position more.
Yeah. Would you use a mountain bike on this event if you could do it over again, like a hardtail, or would you just like something with suspension up front maybe, or maybe even in back? I don't know.
I'm not sure if I need suspension, but I would love, so granted there's this bike shortage in the world right now. So if I stick to the bike I have, the Salsa Warbird, ideally, I think what I would do is put on 650B wheels and just go fatter on the tires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up to something almost like a 2.0, like a mountain bike size tire or something, right? Up
for front, sure.
At least.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a hardtail mountain bike will also be quite adequate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because that would be the other thing that the Salsa has is you can attach so many things to it. It's made for these sort of events, right? Yeah. So That makes it easy. Whereas hardtail mountain bikes, not quite as common to have so many attachment points.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you use for equipment on this? Like, were you using like typical mountain bike shoes, or did you pick ones that you'd be able to walk in, just anticipating it would be such a long event? Or what did you pick there?
I forget the name of my shoes, but they're the Shimano. I think they're gravel bike shoes.
Okay.
So I had to be able to walk because I knew I was going to walk.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's, so the cleats are recessed. And so I was able to hike quite a bit in them.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. So then that way you're still, it's like a mountain bike shoe with tread on the bottom that you can still walk.
Yeah. XC3 maybe.
That would make sense, knowing Shimano's naming conventions. I think it's tough to keep them all straight.
Yeah.
So, and then what did you do for, did you do anything unique for saddle comfort? Cause I'm thinking of the contact points, your hands, your feet, and then the saddle. Did you do anything unique in terms of bibs or your saddle on this long ride?
No, and maybe I should have. I did have a professional bike fit done. So I've had the bike for a year. I kind of translated my road bike measurements over, but for the event, I'm like, I better just get this checked. So I had to fit it properly. So it's not the original Celsa seat on there. It's one of the specialized one that she recommended. Mm-hmm. So I do have a good saddle on it that I've used for a year. No, I have no issues with it. And I made one of the biggest mistakes that, you know, everyone talks about, you should not wear new things on a race.
Yeah.
So guess what? I bought new shorts.
Yeah.
Wore them on day one and I had saddle sore the rest of the time. So don't do that.
Brutal.
Yeah.
How did you manage like the carrying everything on you? Did you wear a pack or did you have frame bags?
I did not want to pack because I don't want to add things to add weight to my saddle. So I had, because Celsa's bike have all these attachment points, like you said, I had two fork bags that had food and my powder, the Perpetuum, had my spare battery pack, that type of things in them. And then I had just a little burrito bag on my handlebar. And I had a seat pack for spare clothes and my BB bag.
So that's, and then you didn't have anything on your person necessarily, no bag, which makes, that's a smart choice too, with so much bumping and rattling. You just, if you wear a backpack, it's even more weight on those wrists and hands, right?
Yeah. I did use a little hip pack. I forget where it's from. It's a small one. So most mountain bikers have one of those. And that's just for like my wallet and chamois cream and all that easily accessible stuff.
Much easier to carry.
Yeah.
What did you do for hydration? We've mentioned like Perpetuum and then you mentioned electrolytes. Did you take those like in the form of like pills or did you have the like salt sticks or was it just pure powder?
They're tablets. So it's the Hammer Nutrition one, which I think is quite similar to the salt sticks. Mm-hmm. So I would watch the temperature of the day. So I always start the day with at least one tablet. And then as it gets warmer, I just make sure I take 2 to 4 per hour. Because I am a heavy sweater. So I just want to make sure I keep up with that. And I think you never really know if it's the right amount, but I didn't have any cramps. So I take that as a win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you handle sun protection in the heat in such a long event?
I bought a tube of sunscreen, the 110
SPF.
Thank you. And I just layered it on.
Yeah.
I wore sun sleeves as well.
Smart. Yeah. For such a long event, right?
Yeah.
How about pacing? Did you have an idea? Like when you started this, did you have like, were you looking at the route and thinking, here, I really want to dose an effort in this area and in this spot? No. Or were you just thinking, enjoy the process, like haze in the barn with the training, and now I just get to enjoy it? What was your approach?
Probably somewhere in between. So I certainly I'm no Megan to do this in 2 days. So incredible.
Megan Hakkinen, as you were referring to, past successful athletes podcast owner, and she actually won the event, which is just amazing. Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. So I had a goal to do this in 7 days. It's a huge event for me, and I didn't want to compare myself to anyone else. So I thought, I think I could handle it in 7 days. It would still be hard. But I don't know if I'll ever find time to do this again. So I really wanted to enjoy it. And that means if I see something that looks awesome, I'm going to stop and take a photo. Mm. So I was somewhere in between. So I had sort of roughly daily goals of mileage set out, depending on the elevation. But I wanted to also take a breath and take photos and enjoy the view. So I came back with a ton of photos.
Oh, I want you to share those with me because this route is so personally interesting to me. It's just such a beautiful place.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah. You must have seen so much. So this is one of those situations where you had worked hard so that you could enjoy this and you could, because when you get completely boxed and tired and you're totally out of it, you don't even want to stop and take photos and you quit enjoying it. Right.
Yeah.
Did you have those points on this ride where you were just completely, you mentioned the hands and the pain there, but other points where you didn't think that you would finish?
Absolutely. Many times. So the first part that started bothering me were the saddle sores that I acquired on day one because of my new shorts. And then roughly at the 400K mark, I decided I've had enough. I'm going to pull the plug. I'm still proud of my efforts, but I'm going to, stop at the next town and call my husband and say, look, I'm done. Come pick me up.
Yeah.
So it's funny. So most people started in Marist. So they're all going eastbound. And I was one of the few going westbound. So the cool part is I actually ran into some people on the way because, as they go this way, I'm going this way. And you could tell when someone is doing this. Yeah. So first you could see them on Track Leader and they're dressed a certain way and they ride a certain bike. So, and a friend of mine was going eastbound and I ran into her at almost the halfway point. And I was really happy to see her. I'm like, hey, Steph, just so you know, I'm going to scratch, the saddle sore is really hurting. And Steph being the amazing woman she is, she's like, maybe just take a day off and then reassess tomorrow. And we chit chatted and I said, look, saddle sore is really bad. She's actually done the Tour Divide and she shared with me that she rode the Tour Divide on saddle sores for 2 months.
Oh my goodness. she can suffer.
Yeah. And sometimes we don't realize that it's okay to be in this other circumstance. And her just saying that made me realize, oh, you mean I could still do this even though I'm hurting?
Yeah, that's a really good point though. It's a different frame of reference. We haven't thought of it from that perspective.
Exactly.
So what did you end up doing? Did you take the day off or how did you move forward?
Yeah. So after she continued on, I continued on into Grand Fork. That was the last night I took a hotel. So I took a hotel room that night. And the next day it was so hot. I just thought, I'm just going to sit this one out. So I sat in the air conditioned room, ate huge amounts of salad because I really craved vegetables by then. And then, I thought, okay, I think I could do this. And I'm already at a halfway point. It'd be silly not to finish. So that's when I rode out that night at 8:30 and finished the rest of it. So thanks to Steph, I actually finished this because she talked me into it in a very gentle way.
That's incredible. So halfway through, the glass half full perspective for sure, because the glass half empty perspective is like, I have to do all of this again, right?
Yeah.
What did you do to maintain the positive outlook? Because I'm sure the challenges continued to occur.
I wouldn't pretend to say I was positive the entire second half. But by then I thought, man, if I could just finish this, I get to see my family. So my husband was watching me on Track Leader and they were actually in Whistler on vacation. So he was supposed to judge when I would get to Merritt and come to pick me up. So I just kept thinking, I can't wait to see my kids. I can't wait to see my husband. That's what I look forward to the most. And knowing that I could finish this, I thought to myself, like, this would be a huge achievement for me. And I do look forward to that.
Yeah. What does this mean to you? I mean, so you have your family, you have your career, you have many things to be proud of.
Yeah.
So what did this race mean for you? What value was it bringing to you?
That's a very deep question. I feel that it makes me realize if I put my mind to something, I could actually do it. And, you know, we tell our kids this all the time. If you just put your mind to something, you'll get there. For me to actually apply that to such a long ride was really interesting.
Yeah. And how inspiring. Your kids have this fantastic example now of, hey, my mom did that. She did that. I can do this, whatever I'm going through.
It's funny. Sometimes I come home from a 100K ride. They'll be like, you only rode 100K today?
You've set the bar too high now, Angela.
You could do 1,000. I'm like, that's a little different.
Yeah, you set the bar too high. That's funny. What was your favorite part of it? Whether it was like a beautiful area or just a moment that was really powerful for you. What was your favorite part across 7 days? My goodness.
Yeah, I think there's a couple. I mean, one would be this is really weird. The kindness of strangers. So I've had a few points run out of water, and I had people. So the decommissioned rail grade is mostly there were no cars. But there are a few points where cars are allowed to get on if they had a cabin on the side of the trail. So one couple pulled over and said, hey, do you need some water? I'm like, yes, I would love some. So not only did they fill all of my water bottles, they had these frozen bottles of water for their own use because they're going to their cabin. And they insisted that I take it. I'm like, no, it's okay. Being the nice Canadian, I'm like, oh no, it's quite all right. And they're like, no, you're taking this. And by that afternoon, I was so happy to have this icy cold water to drink. And that happened multiple times on this route. Just the stranger's kindness and people pulling over to be like, hey, you okay? Do you need anything? And I don't know if that's because I was by myself and a woman, so people were more concerned. I, can't speak for other people. But that was a huge thing for me. And I think the other is just feeling like everything else melts away. Your job doesn't necessarily matter. The money you make really doesn't matter. Your status, the clothes you have, the car, none of that matters. It almost peel away all the unnecessary layers of life, and you get to focus on what's truly important. And to me, that's my family. So it just puts into focus what's truly important in life. Because I think you're just in survival mode. So in survival mode, what's truly important to you? And that's always a nice perspective to regain.
That's the real power of effort right there, right? Yeah. Like when effort requires something of you that is significant like that, life simplifies by force.
Exactly.
But there's so much that comes from that.
Yeah.
How cool. What an incredible race. You're an incredible example and an inspiration to me too, Angela. This is just, I appreciate you setting aside the time to talk about this. This is just
so
cool.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any way of athletes want to get in touch with you, how you would refer them to do so, whether it would be through, I don't know if you're on social media or anything else. What would you say to
that? I'm fairly active on Instagram. So, if you want to reach out to me on Instagram, I'm _Angela.Chang.
Cool.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So any questions about equipment, route, training? I'm always happy to answer those.
Awesome. Very cool. Angela, this is just fantastic. If you're listening to this right now and you've used Trainer Road to accomplish anything, whether it's a huge route like this, a whole week long route, or if it's something that is not even a route, something that's just very personal to you, I would love to hear it. And you can do so. Go to trainerroad.com/SAP. and share how Train Road has helped make you successful. Love to hear that. So Angela, this is fantastic. I'm no doubt going to be in touch with you because I have a dream of riding across BC in a similar route to this. So awesome. Just fantastic. Thanks a bunch, Angela.
Excellent. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Take care.